This is Justin with a quick note before today's show. I know that some of you are traveling frequently on deployments with limited connectivity, so I've put together a deployment kit. It's a flash drive with 80 episodes, including ones I haven't yet released on the show, as well as ebooks and a PDF of all the show notes. Check it out on the resources tab at beyonduniform.io. Thanks and enjoy the show. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today is episode number 59 with Dr. Patrick Ledin.
It was literally something we started above our garage, and over the next 12 years or so, we grew it to a few different offices, and it was one of those situations where it became to some degree all-consuming. We have two children, my wife and I do, and they're adults now, and it was kind of a situation where we felt like we always had this third child, our business, Wedgewood Group, and it probably came to every dinner conversation and every car ride. Wedgewood was just there. I think for me, the point where I realized, oh my gosh, this thing is like really real, is when our payroll was every 2 weeks, and when our payroll hit about $100,000 every 2 weeks, all of a sudden I was like, holy cow, what did I get myself into?
The top four reasons to listen to today's show are, number one, growing a company. After 2 years in consulting at KPMG, Patrick left to start his own consulting firm. 10 years later, Inc. magazine recognized them as one of the fastest growing companies in America, and they were acquired 1 year later. Patrick shares the details of this exhilarating ride. Number two, marriage. Patrick started his consulting company with his wife and his advice and thoughts about starting a company with your significant other. Number three, puzzle. In looking at Patrick's career and life, he's done a really effective job of integrating his professional life in a way in which there is diversity that adds more fulfillment to his life. He currently is a professor at Vanderbilt, consults with Franklin Covey, and is an author. I find him a fantastic role model for building fulfillment into one's professional life. And number four, life circle. At the very end, Patrick talks about evaluating all the components of your life as a circle and evaluating how you're performing in each area. And he talks about the incremental effort in making them better. It's some of the best advice I've had on the show. As always, show notes and link to all of Patrick's great book recommendations are available at beyonduniform.io. So let's dive in to my interview with Patrick. Joining me today in Nashville, Tennessee is Dr. Patrick Ledin. Patrick, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Oh, hi, Justin. Thanks for having me today.
So for our listeners, I wanted to give them a quick insight on your background. Patrick is a professor at Vanderbilt University's Managerial Studies program, where he teaches both corporate strategy and principles of marketing. He started out in the Army, where he served for over 6 years with the 82nd Airborne Division as a platoon leader, staff officer, and company commander. After transitioning from the Army, he worked as a senior consultant at KPMG. He then started his own consulting firm, the Wedgewood Consulting Group, and served as managing director. In 2011, Inc. magazine named Wedgewood one of the fastest-growing private companies in America, and they were acquired in 2012. Patrick holds a PhD in communication from the University of Kentucky and has also worked as a director and senior consultant at Franklin Covey for nearly 16 years. So, Patrick, maybe to start, just reversing the clock, take us back to the moment you decided to leave the Army and how you approached that decision.
Oh, yeah, it was an interesting time. When I did this, it would have been in the late 1990s, so it's before, you know, the current op tempo that people are going through right now. So when I got out of the Army, maybe I was naive at the time to think of this, but I remember a lot of people telling me, I was in the 82nd Airborne Division, and I had done a couple leadership jobs there, and people were always telling me, like, this is the best time of your career type of thing. And my mind kept thinking, as the mind of some 20-some-year-old might think, well, if this is the best of times, maybe I should just go on and move and do something else. So I made that move to get out of the military, and then I'll be honest, after I initially transitioned, I really missed it for a long time. So one thing I would think about is, when you're getting out or when you choose to get out, you know, think twice about it. Make sure it's a good decision for you. Because for me, I spent about a year where I kind of yearned for the uniform still. But that was kind of my thought process. I was like, I felt like I'd been there and done that some, and now I was ready to move on to the next phase of my career. I just want to make sure that if I was ever to go through that again, I'd just really think it through even better than I did the first time to make sure I'm really comfortable with the decision. In the end, it was a great decision for me, but that transition can be a little difficult.
Yeah, I echo that too. I don't think at the time I realized how much it was a part of my identity and how much purpose that kind of gave to my life, even if it wasn't in front of my face all the time. And then once that's gone, you really notice its absence in a way that I wasn't quite aware when I was actually in.
Exactly. There's an expression out there that says, fish discover water last because you're in it. And it's the same type of thing. You're in it, so you don't realize the value of it until it's not there. And then you kind of yearn for it for a little while. So for me, and I had actually joined the National Guard right out of high school. So I had a few years of kind of wearing the uniform on a part-time basis and then several on a full-time basis. And it was just something that had become part of my identity. Mm.
And when you got out, I think it's always interesting to look at that first job search. What was that like, and how did you ultimately land a role at KPMG?
Well, it was not the easiest of situations, only because I didn't really recognize the value of what I'd learned in my military service. It's hard to go, okay, I'm in the infantry. What does that equate to in the quote-unquote real world type of thing? And for me, the ability to articulate what I learned in the Army and how that does feed over to the business world was something I had to learn to do. I remember working with a few colleagues of mine. We were all transitioning out around the same time, and we would spend a lot of time, like many, many hours, sitting in somebody's apartment just kind of drilling each other on interview questions so we could get comfortable explaining how what we did in the past in our military life translates over to the business life. And for me, at least when I talk to students now and they ask me about interviewing for jobs, I'm like, you have to always be connecting. You have to have people, when they ask you a question, you need to be able to explain in a way that you're already doing, you already have done the type of job they're hiring for. Mm. So for me, the ability to really think through, what does it mean to be a staff officer in the military? How does that relate to the quote-unquote real world? What does it mean to lead a platoon? How does that relate? And be able to tell stories in ways to people who are interviewing me, saying, this is how what I've learned in the past demonstrates that I would be successful in what you're hoping for me to do in the future. So for me, actually, I came out of the Army. I had a little space between the time I left the Army and the time I joined KPMG, where I was trying to figure out which direction I wanted to go. I had a former Army buddy who was working at KPMG who I was talking to. He told me a little bit about his world and what he was doing, and I thought, okay, that seems to make sense to me because I like the idea of, you know, helping to solve problems and come in and take a client wherever they currently are performing and help them get to a new level by kind of my helping them think through the problem. I just liked that type of work. So that's kind of how I ended up going there.
That's great, and I love that thought too of no one wants to take a risk in hiring anyone, and so if you can convince them, hey, I was wearing a uniform when I did this, but what I was doing was essentially the same, I think that just de-risks it for them and helps them more quickly understand your background in terms that make sense to them.
Right, and I think that there's Justin, there's like a delicate balance. The ability to say to someone in an interviewing process, I've been there and done what you want me to do, but not do it in a way where you're like suggesting that you know everything about their world. Mm. Because what they were doing at KPMG Consulting was different than what I did in the military. But I wanted to make sure that they didn't realize it was a big stretch or their risk was too high. But on the other hand, I didn't want to like diminish what it is they do in the consulting world. So trying to find that right balance of saying something like, and it's been a while since I had like interviews like this, but as far as for jobs, but I would say something like, I would imagine that in your world of consulting, you know, these things matter to you. They were also important to me in the military. Here's how they played out. I would imagine they play out in similar ways in your space. So kind of that type of thing. And I always tell people when I'm talking to them, you have probably done the type of work that you're looking to do in the future. You just haven't been able to frame it that way. So if they say customer relationship management really matters in our world, well, tell me about the time you did that. Maybe it was at McDonald's, but you were out there working with customers and you understood the importance of the relationship. Managing projects matters here in your future job. Well, guess what? You've managed projects before when you're at a live fire range. So helping them make those connections, I think, are important things.
Yeah, I agree. I remember a friend at business school helping me. I told him a couple stories of things I did in the military, and he basically walked me back through. And he's like, look, in a consulting mindset, what you just told me you did is you identified the problem, you figured out solutions, you ran that by key stakeholders, and then you sold it to a group. And he's like, that's basically what you're doing as a consultant, but let me help you repackage your story in those terms. And it was the exact same story. It was just reframing it in a framework that would make sense to the listener.
Exactly. And it just speaks to that listener in a way they go, okay, you get what I'm trying to do.
And You know, the first of several things that just really blew me away with your background is that after 2 years at KPMG, you decided to start your own consulting practice. And I'm just curious what that was like. Like, at what point you realized, hey, I can do this on my own, and how you worked up the courage to actually leave a very secure and reputable job and strike it on your own.
Well, I think that there's, you know, there's always a story behind the story. So from my perspective, what might look like was such a smart move or a bold move, in hindsight, was probably short-sighted in some ways, to be just completely honest. Mm-hmm. So just like when I left the military, I joined KPMG, and I was there for, I guess, about 2.5 years or so. And I was really fortunate in that I started on a project where it was myself and one other person, and it was worth about, our portion of the work was worth about $300,000 a year for the two resources. When I left 2.5 years later, the project was worth $13.5 million, and I was leading the project with a whole team of people underneath me. So it was kind of one of those things like, oh my gosh, it wasn't necessarily anything I did particularly. Although if I hadn't done some things well, I would have been gone quickly. But I just kind of was in the right spot, and, you know, opportunity meets preparation type thing, and I had some good people around me and all that type of thing. And I ended up at a really good spot 2.5 years later, and my natural inclination, for good or bad back then, was just like with the military. Okay, I got to this certain point, but, you know, what's next type of thing? And I kind of wanted to go to the next challenge. I've learned over time that I being a good sprinter is important. You know, I can sprint from point A to point B, or used to be able to sprint from point A to point B on a project or whatever, but it's also good to be a marathon runner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people want both. And at that point, I was so focused on the sprinting thing. I was kind of like, okay, I got this. I know what's going on. I'm going to take it to the next level, and I'm going to start this business type of thing. And I just had one client, and I was working for them above my garage, and my wife and I were working together. She was a professor at University of Dayton at the time. And then it just kind of snowballed from there and kept growing. So it was one of those things that, you know, had I thought it all through really well, maybe I wouldn't have done it. But it was the right move for me to make, bold or otherwise.
And before we get into what that was like growing that, I'm just curious if you were advising another veteran, because you said that in retrospect you might not have done it this way. If you were advising, let's say, a veteran who's in the exact same position right now, maybe they're at a consulting firm and they're thinking of starting their own consulting firm, what would you advise them to do differently? Would it be to get more experience at that consulting firm, or to get an experience somewhere else, or how would you advise them to proceed?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I guess I would have to tell you that, you know, all commentary like this is autobiographical, right? So it's kind of like, yeah, me giving advice to me in the past.
Yep.
So when I think about this particular thing, I think it played out really well for me, but I didn't let go of my full-time job until I had the other one up and running. So I was doing my full-time job at KPMG, which was you know, pretty time-consuming. And then I literally started with one client doing some additional work on the side. So it wasn't like I jumped across this big, you know, crevasse that I could have fallen into. I was already working my way across it. But at some point it became, gosh, I've got this work on the side going on. This could really take off for its own if I really step into it. But if I don't step into it, it never really will. So I would say, make sure, you know, letting go of one thing is important in order to grab something else, but make sure there's something tangible there to grasp on the other end. And in my world, I was fortunate enough to make that happen. So that's one thing is I would make sure you do that. The second thing is, when I think about, if I were to do it all over again, what would I do differently? I probably would have built the business from day one as if I was going to sell it, because when you go to sell a business, there's a lot of things you have to kind of go back, and I don't want to say clean up, because there wasn't anything done particularly wrong, but there was a lot of manual processes that were in place that had to be revisited to make sure everything was straight, and a lot of accountants and attorneys that needed to be paid that, you know, had I done it a little bit differently, maybe it would have been a little bit smoother. But as far as you know, when's the right time to jump from one thing to another, I don't know if there's ever a right time. I've heard people say before, I heard a guy one time, he was retiring from the news media, and they asked him, you know, is it the right time to leave? Aren't you leaving too early? He's like, well, you can never, if you wait too long, then people say you should have left a long time ago. And if you leave too early, at least people are saying, well, he's bold and willing to step out. So I would just say, make sure you have, you know, some place to go to. I have students who often say, well, how did you get to where you're at? And I kind of explain the path, and they think, as I'm explaining it to them, I can clearly tell that I'm kind of disappointing them. because they think that I had some grand plan that I just unfurled in front of myself and just have been walking the same path. And the reality is, it's not that. The reality is, it's a series of decisions. You know, you try to do the best job you can in the job you're in, because that's going to be the best job you ever have type mentality. But then when you get to the next, you know, fork in the road, try to make the next best decision.
I think that's such great advice. And it's, you know, it's something, honestly, I'm just learning through these interviews, is that sometimes I view people further ahead as having had some master plan. And most oftentimes it turns out to be just doing the job before them, doing the best thing possible, and things precipitously come into their lives. But it's not this master plan of jumping from one lily pad to the next. It's just really blowing out every job that they do.
Yeah, I heard somebody say one time that no job is you'll never have a better job than the job you're in right now. And oftentimes that's not true. But if you can act as if it's true and put your all into it, it opens up other doors for you. Because people see talent around them. And what I've noticed over time is that whether it's a client or a leader in a business or whomever it might be, or even somebody in the military in a leadership position, if they have more things on their plate that they could handle. And they're always looking for good talent to come along and help them out. So from that perspective, just kind of putting yourself in the position where if somebody's needing help, you're willing to step in and kind of close that breach, creates opportunity.
That's great. And what was it like growing your own consulting practice? Take us from when you were working with your wife above your garage to what that was like, just the day-to-day of growing it.
So it was literally something we started above our garage, and over the next 12 years or so, we grew it to a few different offices and many employees, not hundreds of employees, but dozens of employees, if you will, and lots of, you know, contractors and people we worked with. And it was one of those situations where it became to some degree all consuming. We have two children, my wife and I do, and they're adults now. And it was kind of a situation where we felt like we always had this third child, our business, Wedgewood Group. And it probably came to every dinner conversation and every car ride. Wedgewood was just there. And I wouldn't go back and change it, because by having that business and being able to succeed in that business has allowed us a bunch of different opportunities in life. But you really have to realize, when you step into situations like that, it's really hard to go, I have a personal life and then I have my business life. It's like, no, you have one life. And this thing's going to play a big role in it for a while. I imagine, just like these interviews that you're doing with me and myself and other people, probably sometimes it can become very consuming. And you just have to be willing to say, okay, when it's tough, I'm just going to double down on this thing.
That's great.
And I think for me, the point where I realized, oh my gosh, this thing is like really real, is when our payroll was every 2 weeks. And when our payroll hit about $100,000 every 2 weeks, all of a sudden I was like, holy cow, what did I, you know, what did I get myself into? You know, type of thing. I got to keep this thing going, type of thing. So to me, and so much of it is not myself or my wife, but the people we surrounded ourselves with were just great.
I'm curious, and for listeners, episode 37 with David Cho was an interview where it's a husband and wife combo running. In that case, it's like a beauty e-commerce company. But I'm curious, what advice do you have for veterans listening who might want to start a company with a significant other?
I think my biggest advice, if I was to go back and change it all, I didn't necessarily do a very good job of recognizing that she's my business partner, but she's also my wife, and she's my wife first. And I can't enter every discussion talking about business, because she has other needs and things she wants to talk about that need to be satisfied. And sometimes I kind of didn't get really clear in my mind that there were two different roles that I was fulfilling with her, and vice versa. So sometimes it just kind of became all about business. So I think that the ability to kind of, even though it's all one life and hard to do, at least not maybe turning off the business side sometimes, but hitting pause more often and making sure you're feeding both sides of the relationship is probably the biggest thing that I've learned. I've had a bad side of me, which is a side that makes me not want to turn off opportunities. And the reality is, no successful business person has been successful without saying no to certain things. So for me, the desire to keep every opportunity open has sometimes held me back from excelling really well at them. So I think as I look back, excelling really well at certain ones of them. So I think as I look back, like, oh, when we had the business, I wish I just closed the door on this project and that one sooner, and spent a little bit more time kind of nurturing our marriage. My wife and I, we just crossed 25 years of marriage, so we're doing great. But you know, the road's going to be bumpy, but just making sure you don't forget that when at the end of the day, the marriage should still be there.
Mm, that's such great advice. And I think it's so, there's like a Harvard last lecture on that where the professor just talks about how it's so easy for us to invest in our career because it's so objectively measured by how much money we make. And these other areas of our life are just as important, but they're so qualitative to know, you know, how do you measure a good marriage versus a great marriage or a bad marriage? And, you know, I relate to a lot of what you're saying is that it's very hard to turn down opportunities. And it's just, it's very fulfilling and exhilarating just to throw yourself into work and having the foresight to pull back and invest in these other areas in our life is so crucial.
Well, exactly. And I'll tell you, there's one thing that was kind of interesting. When we've been in the business for a little while, especially when we first began, my wife and I would, even if we went to meetings with the same client together, we would be pretty guarded about using our last names and things like that with new people. I would just, my wife's name is Jamie. I'd be like, this is Jamie, or she'd be like, this is Patrick. And we wouldn't necessarily say our last names because we were fearful of showing that we were husband and wife and maybe we'd seem like a lesser than type of business. But several years into the company, company's existence, we hired an outside marketing firm to help us with some research and also to gain an understanding of what our clients really valued about us. And the thing that came back from almost every client it was, we like the fact that they're husband and wife because we feel that they're very invested in what we're trying to do. This isn't just a job for them. This is something bigger they're trying to build together. Or we like the fact that they've been together for 10 or 15 or 20 years as a married couple, and we like that showing that level of commitment to each other demonstrates potentially a commitment to us as a company or our customers. And I think was all of a sudden it was like, wow, the thing that I'm trying to we're almost trying to run away from, if you will, is one of our biggest strengths. So instead of trying to diminish it, just embrace it.
That's
so
great.
It wasn't like we walked. We didn't stroll into meetings holding hands, but we certainly didn't. We didn't hold off from, you know, letting people know, yeah, we're married.
And, that's awesome.
And which is kind of an interesting dynamic. So I think finding that, you know, finding that situation where clients are cool with it kind of made it easier for us in the later years of the company.
You know, you mentioned a moment when you looked at the payroll and you realized that this was bigger than you expected. I'm just wondering, in the 11 plus years that you were running Wedgewood, was there do you remember a moment at which it kind of hit a pivot, or it just hit an inflection point, or it went from being pushing a boulder uphill to having the wind behind you? I'm just wondering if there was like some critical moment where everything seemed to change.
Well, you know, Jim Collins talks about the idea of the flywheel, and if you can get enough pushes on the flywheel, it'll become prisoner of its own inertia, and the company takes off type of thing. And I'm probably not capturing that right, but you get the idea. And I remember he was talking in Good to Great about the company Kimberly-Clark, and he said, you know, when did the flywheel really take off on its own? And the answer was sometime in the 70s. In other words, there wasn't like one big push that made it all change. But I think that there were a couple different inflection points, as you said. One of which is, I remember the first time we had a couple of employees, and our employees were going to meetings on behalf of the firm, and Jamie and I, we weren't there. And that was a point where we kind of like looked at each other going, oh my goodness, they're in a meeting with our client right now. We trust that they're going to do this. And we're nervous. We can't wait for them to call us after it's over with, but they're out there doing it. So there was that kind of moment where you start going from feeling like you need to control everything to starting to release things. That was probably an inflection point for us. I think we hired one gentleman to run our office in Washington, D.C. We had an office up there in Crystal City area. And when we hired him, it was a big inflection moment for us, if you will, because he was actually a former military officer. He came out of the 82nd as well. We hired him. He went in there and he just, in his own way, took it over his business and started building it. And that was a real inflection point for us. And I think that there one thing that wasn't necessarily, it was kind of like little moments over time, were things like when we were sitting in a meeting one time as a firm and we were talking, we had kind of had an annual meeting. We were sitting there talking with everybody about, well, we do this kind of work, human capital type of work, and we do it for these type of clients. So are we more about human capital, or are we more about this kind of client? And the answer was, no, we're really more about human capital type solutions. It just happens to be we're doing that work in a certain client space. That kind of, okay, here's what we are and what we aren't type moments were very helpful as well. So I think it's kind of a series of moments like that where it's like, wow, I'm standing at the American Society of Training and Development standing up as a key presenter talking about what we are doing as a firm. You know, those kind of moments came over time at little points to like, wow, this is where we feel like it's really starting to move.
What about, what was the worst moment? I imagine there must have been some harrowing times. Was there one particular moment that just stands out as the bottom of that exhilarating experience?
Well, when you say harrowing times, it kind of reminds me of who the audience is that's listening to this. There's nothing harrowing in what I'm going to talk about, like what many of these people have faced in life. So let's put that in perspective.
But, that's
you
great.
Know, we had a client who was just, if you're familiar with like the idea of an alpha male, you know, a real aggressive type of person. This guy was an alpha, 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 plus, plus, plus type of guy. You know, just an in-your-face, aggressive type of guy. And I remember one time where he just addressed one of our consultants. He addressed her up one side and down the other, inappropriately the way he got mad at her. And I remember stepping in and telling him, hey, you can't talk to my people that way. It was really an uncomfortable moment. And this guy was responsible for a significant portion of our business. But I remember saying, you know, we're willing to walk from this. And we didn't actually walk from it, not because I wasn't willing to walk from it, but because when we went back and kind of decompressed as a team and talked about the situation, the team members, including the lady who was involved, were like, no, we don't want to walk away from this client, but we need to handle the situation differently going forward. So the ability for me to go back in and have a conversation with him about, you know, we're willing to stay and do work with you, but if it continues down this path, we don't want to stay. We want to break the relationship. I think that was kind of a nervous point, because the part of me that wanted to defend my people was like, yep, I'm walking away from it. The other part of me that was scared for the business was like, oh, but if I walk away, can we survive? In the end, we actually did release that client for different reasons. And releasing that client, although it took away like 30% of our revenue, was probably one of the best moments ever for us. So I think it's kind of that whole mix of dealing with, we've got so many eggs in the basket with this one client, and maybe we've got ourselves over leveraged. Like that moment where you realize I've got too many eggs in this basket here is kind of concerning. I don't know if I articulated that very well.
No, that's great.
The idea, the idea of being over leveraged is concerning. And I know I felt that in the pit of my stomach, like, oh my gosh, can I not do what I think is the right thing because of this? So ultimately, you know, choosing to do the right thing was the best thing for us.
Yeah, and like that wake up call of realizing that stage in your business, the importance of diversifying and de-risking and of not relying on one client. That's pretty incredible.
And it's tough to do, right? Because you're spending so much time trying to service and support the few clients you have. Finding other ones is hard to do at the same time, but you have to figure that out.
And then you know, just under a year after Inc. Magazine recognizes you for your incredible growth, you end up selling. I'm wondering what that acquisition process was like, and any advice for any veteran going through a similar process.
Sure. So a little bit of background on that. So what happened was, when I actually left KPMG Consulting, one of the companies I started working with right away was a company called Franklin Covey. And people may know Franklin Covey from the old Franklin Planning Tools time management system. They might know it from one of the founders wrote a book called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. They've written a number of books like Speed of Trust or Four Disciplines of Execution. So they were a client of ours and built a really good relationship with them. And what happened was, in 2011, one of my contacts at Franklin Covey said they're getting ready to launch a new program, a new training program, and they wanted to know if I'd be willing to go out and kind of be the marketing face of it for some presentations. So there were these little three-hour presentations explaining the business case for this particular offering and explaining kind of the content to people, and then hopefully they'll say, yes, they want to engage with Franklin Covey. So I said, sure, I'll be happy to do that. Where do you want me to go? And he said, well, there's 175 cities around the world we're going to launch this program in. How about I send you the list of cities and you tell me where you want to go?
That's like a dream.
crazy moment, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I get the list of 175 cities. And I'm like sitting down with my wife. I'm like, well, where do you want to go? I mean, how often do you get that question asked in your life? So we started picking cities. We're like, well, we'd like, obviously we'll do some here in the States. We could go to Canada, and then we'd like to go to Europe, and we'd like to spend some time in Asia. It was like this whole thing like this, but can we do it and leave, you know, our employees back here, you know, running the store, if you will. And we said, yeah, we talked it with them, and they said, yeah, we think we can do it. So my wife and I and our son at the time, because our daughter had just left for college, we spent 3 months overseas. And we came back in November of 2011, I guess it was. Came back in November 2011, and I was talking to one of my former bosses at KPMG Consulting. This is why it's important to keep, you know, friends close and have a good network. I was talking to him around the holidays, and he said, "So what's been going on?" I said, "Well, believe it or not, man, we just spent, you know, 3 months overseas. We got to go to Asia and live in Malaysia and Singapore and all this stuff." And he was like, "And your clients are still with you?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "And your employees haven't quit?" And I'm like, "No." And then there was like this pause. He's like, "Would you like to talk to my boss?" And I'm like, "About what?" He goes, "We're looking to acquire some businesses. Maybe it makes sense for you two to talk."
Wow.
So it was just like that type of thing. Yeah. So I wasn't looking to sell it. But then when he and I started talking, I was like, "Okay, this makes sense." I said to my wife, "Do you want to sell it?" And she's like, "Yeah, we could do that." So so then it was about a 5 or 6 month process of – we had some government contracts, so those had to go through, I believe it's called novation, where they're checking to make sure that everything, all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed, and it could be, the contract can be moved over to another company and all those type of things. And working with our employees and getting the evaluation of the business figured out, all that stuff took about 6 months. And it was at there was a couple points throughout all that where you feel like, oh, this thing might fall apart, you know, type of thing. I remember at one point my wife and I had made the proclamation to ourselves, oh, we're going to take a percentage of what we sell the business for and we're going to give it away. And we were bold with that move, and then we gave it away, and then we weren't sure if the business was going to really sell. So there was a moment of, oh, my gosh, what do we do? But I remember we got to the point where we're like, I don't know if this thing's going to go through. And we just talked to the guy who was purchasing the company, and no accountants on the phone, no attorneys on the phone. We just kind of had leader-to-leader conversation saying, you know, here's what we really need to get from this business. He's like, here's what I can really pay. And we just said, okay, let's do that. And then we went back to the accountants and said, here's what we're going to sell it for. And they were, you imagine the accountants were like, whoa, 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 what are you doing talking to them? But it was like, at some point, we just need to talk to each other and make a decision. And that's what we did. And I'm happy to do that because nowadays I can still go back to that guy's office who bought our company and talk to him. And he likes me. And I've sent students from my university over to interview with him for possible internships. So, I mean, it's nice to be able to have that relationship out there in a good way.
Yeah, it's so refreshing to hear rather than this thought of just fighting tooth and nail for everything and this adversarial relationship that I would have assumed initially this was, but to hear that it was much more cordial and collegial is very encouraging.
Yeah, it's been a good thing.
And you pursued your PhD while running the company, is that right?
That's right. Yep.
What was that like? Was that I imagine it was great to be able to be learning and applying it directly to your work, but I imagine at the same time that was extremely strenuous from a time perspective.
Yeah, it was pretty insane, to be honest with you. And it's many of your listeners probably can think of times where in their military life where it's like really intense and there's a lot going on, and you look back at it afterwards and you say, oh my gosh, I don't want to take that hill again. It was really tough. And this is one of those things. This is one of those things where you look back and you say, if somebody said you have to go back and get your PhD again, I'd be like, I don't think so. it was definitely tough. I mean, there were times I remember I was living in Louisville and I was going to University of Kentucky. So that's about I can tell you it was 63 miles from door to door, and all my classes were on campus. So there wasn't anything on the internet or anything. So I'd go back and forth every week, lots of times. And then there were also times where I remember being like in Phoenix for a meeting, jumping on a plane, flying back to Lexington, going to class, turning around, getting right back on a plane and flying back to Phoenix. I mean, just crazy stuff like that for a few years. But if I hadn't had my own business, there was really no way I could have pulled that off, because there's no company that would, you know, allow you to be that, you know, flexible with your time. So I think if I had my own business, it wouldn't have happened. I think if I hadn't been in the military and, you know, hadn't had the GI Bill available to me, it would have been a much tougher discussion to go through. But ultimately, the reason I went back was because I felt like one thing you do in consulting, just like you said, Justin, is the idea of looking at the situation, stepping back, evaluating it, figuring out where you want to go to, coming up with a process to get from here to there, all that type of stuff is great. And every firm, every consulting firm has their process. Here's how we do business process reengineering or whatever, or eight-step process or whatever. And my mind is always like, okay, you say that's the eight-step proven process. How do you know it's proven? It's kind of just my mindset. So I wanted to go back and earn my PhD more to scratch an itch around how do I know what the research is behind the things we say that'll work? You know, just because they work once or twice doesn't mean they're going to work every time. So I really want to understand that. And that's kind of what drove me to go back to school.
And how would you explain your work today at Vanderbilt?
Yeah, so I would explain it's a lot of fun. I enjoy it. You mentioned the term inflection point, and I use that in my own mind sometimes. I think that people are on a course of trajectory in their lives, and then every once in a while somebody can speak to them or give them an opportunity that can be an inflection point that'll change that trajectory. And to me, college is one of those times where if somebody can be there that might say something to you that the person who said it might not think it's much at all, but it really made a difference. So one of the reasons I said I want to be in college is because of that. My day-to-day is typically I teach classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I maintain office hours on throughout the week at different times. I also still do a lot of work with Franklin Covey Company. In fact, I actually have a book coming out with them next year about how to lead in the government, how to create effective cultures in government organizations. So that's coming out next year. So I spend a lot of time, writing and doing things like that. But as far as the time at the university, most of my days are spent, the Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays are spent just working with students, doing some research and writing, and I really enjoy that.
It just seems from an external standpoint like you've done an effective job of constructing a life that energizes you, first in creating your own company and working with your wife and being able to travel and do all these things and pursue education. But even now at Vanderbilt, where you're able to teach and mentor and engage with students, but also scratch that working itch with Franklin Covey, and then it sounds like on the side writing. And so it just seems like I'm envious of your ability to kind of find the very different, diverse things that make you happy and weave them all into your professional life.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. Sometimes I don't see it that way because I'm in the midst of it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, if I think about it, I'm able to scratch two or three itches that I really am interested in taking care of. And I think the one thing that drives me these days, not only in addition to trying to, help students and maybe give them some words of advice or guidance or suggestions or whatever it might be, or just some truth that somebody needs to speak sometimes to them, I also like the autonomy that it gives me. I'm a person who I've learned over time that I like the flexibility to go the route I want to go next, and I've kind of, in many ways, kind of created a life that allows me to do that. Mm. So that's pretty, pretty fun.
That's great. No, that really resonates with me as well. I feel like independence is very important in autonomy, and that's one of the advantages of having your own company. In many ways, sometimes I feel a slave to my clients and employees and shareholders and all these different things, but in other ways, you do have that freedom to create your own different aspects of your life, and that's encouraging, inspiring to see how you've done that.
Well, and I'll tell you, getting back to kind of the whole military veteran component to it is, I think that the drive that the military helps instill in you or bring out in you or however you want to look at it, it causes me to always kind of say things like, how can I be a better version of myself next year? Mm. Or how can I, what's the next thing I want to tackle? What's the next thing I want to take on? And I have a bit of, I'm the youngest of five kids from a Catholic family, so I have just enough guilt in my head that kind of keeps me driving towards something else. I need to keep going. So, I think that those type of things, that perseverance, that drive that the military often brings out in us and challenges us, I think that that helps us, even though it may not be a physical thing I have to do, but there's still a mental thing that I need to do and other things that I need to keep leaning into it. And I'll tell you one thing that I can think of one thing that really the military helped me out in over the years. When I talk to students sometimes or just other people about the work that I've done, how did I choose the path that I chose? I remember when I was in the infantry, it was kind of like being at the pointy edge of the spear. We could have an argument about this forever, but in my mind, at least, it's like the Army exists in so many ways to support the infantry person who's on the ground. And I always like that idea of being on the pointy edge of things. So when I'm in consulting, I want to be the consultant. When I'm in an academic area, I want to be the teacher. I feel like those are the pointy edges to the spear, and I want to be in those positions, because if you're able to put yourself in those type of positions, you're always in demand. People need somebody who's willing to step in the classroom, step into consulting engagement, make the next sale, take the next hill, and just, not that I'm always great at it, but I'm willing to step in and give it a shot. Mm.
That kind of leads in well to another question I wanted to ask, which was, what were the habits you built up in the military that really helped you be successful in your civilian career? And on the flip side, what were the habits that you had to break because they wouldn't really serve you well as a civilian?
So I think that there's a lot of things that in the military you just take for granted, like showing up on time and being in the right uniform and those type of things. But those things matter. The ability to be be respectful of people around you matters. The ability to work with a diverse team of people matters. And those are things that you learn in the military. The military teaches you things like, you know, activities matter, but outcomes matter more. So the ability to focus on the goal, not just the activity that gets you there. So those basic things that I learned from the military have been very helpful, the ability to manage my time and things like that. But I think on the flip side, everything's a double-edged sword, you know, it seems to be at least. The strength can also be your weakness. I think the biggest struggle for me was probably, and continues to some degree today, even today, of sometimes because we're in the military, you're used to kind of, okay, I know how to bow down to the people up the chain of command type of thing, be respectful like that. Sometimes in business, people don't want that. They appreciate you calling them sir or being respectful, but they want your opinion. They want to push back. They want that type of thing. And that was a hard thing for me to do sometimes because the person's basically saying, hey, argue with me about this. And I'm thinking, wouldn't that be disrespectful? How would I do that? So trying to find that right balance, if that makes sense, of being able to be respectful, but not deny self, or not deny your ideas. And I also think that because the military is very much like, okay, you serve in this position, you serve this much time, you retain a certain rank, you get to move up and get other experiences. Sometimes in the business world, it's not that way. Sometimes you can go from, you know, I walked in the door and a year later, I'm running some big project. That type of jump can happen. And the ability to say, you know what, whatever table I get a chance to sit at, I deserve to sit at that table. Doesn't mean I can't be, you know, I have to be respectful and all those type of things, but I'm here for a reason and I don't have to feel like I'm an imposter. I'm ready to go. And that's been one thing I've had to learn to do.
That's great, man. I think even 10 years out, I notice there's still this deference to authority and this unwillingness to challenge authority in many contexts. And I love that you use the word imposter. And I know that especially at business school, my entire time there, I just felt like I was playing dress up in my dad's suit. I just felt like I was such an imposter and that I didn't deserve to be there or that I was less qualified. And I think it took me multiple years afterwards to realize, and I love that visual that you have of like, I deserve this seat at this table. Like I deserve to be
here.
And I
didn't come up with that. Actually, a colleague I was working with one time was watching me.
Yeah.
And said something. He came up to me one time in the hallway and I was just like, let me tell you something. You know, you deserve the right to sit at that table. If you've been invited to sit at the table, you sit at it. And deserve is a word I don't really like because I always have that mindset. Like, we don't deserve anything, you know. Mm-hmm. You earn it type of thing. But he was basically saying you've earned it. You've earned the right to sit at a table with senior leadership at a company and have a conversation with them. And you're going to bring something of value to the conversation.
Yeah, exactly. And I love that other part of like, and the reason why that's great is that everyone benefits. When you're fully showing up and fully participating, they will take away more and they will add more value to the meeting. And I just noticed for myself too, the times in which I sit back or I'm not as willing to contribute, everyone suffers because they miss out on that unique perspective.
Exactly. There's this professor down at University of Texas, Brene Brown. You may have heard of her.
From her TED Talk.
But she talks about vulnerability, right, from that TED Talk. And if people listening haven't seen that TED Talk, look it up, Brene Brown.
I'll add it to the show notes as well. It's a great TED Talk.
It is. And it's like, I love what she says there. She talks about, you know, courage is being vulnerable, being willing to put yourself out there. And one thing the military taught me was don't be vulnerable, you know, be guarded, be you know, create a certain, you know, carry yourself a certain way. The whole military bearing thing sometimes in my mind was like the opposite of being vulnerable. And it's like, no, that's not what that means. She's basically saying, she uses the idea of a gladiator, get in the arena and fight. And if you're not in the arena, I don't care what your feedback is. Don't tell me how bad I am if you're not willing to fight yourself. So that whole, if you listen to what she says, it's all of a sudden I went from like this vulnerability is a weakness to this vulnerability is a strength. And I'm pretty good at these, you know, you're asking me to talk about myself for an hour, but I'm pretty good at going into a client situation and saying, I don't know the best way forward on this. Or I'll tell my students, I'm probably the best person to teach this class and probably the worst person to teach this class. You know, so the ability to just be real is something that's hard to be sometimes when you come out of the uniform. Not that you're being fake, but you know what I mean? There's a little bit of being, sometimes when you have the uniform on, there's a bit of a facade we construct or a certain way we have to carry ourselves. And on the corporate side, they don't always want that.
Mm. You know, I was also curious about being in academia, just thoughts on Especially for someone listening who might want to instruct at a collegiate level, just your thoughts on the path you went, which was obtaining a lot of practical experience before going on to teach, versus those who might take a more direct path, and just any thoughts on the trade-offs between those two.
Well, clearly, you know, going the route I went, that means that I don't have a big, research book behind me. I mean, like a body of research behind me. I don't have 50 articles I've published in top peer-reviewed journals and things like that. So that's a negative. The other side is I have a lot of experience where I've had a chance to work in all around the world in different companies and lots of companies you recognize, and that's a strength. So I think part of it is I think anybody can go in and be a good instructor, playing the cards that they've been dealt, and or the cards at the table they chose to sit down and cards they chose to keep. So I go in and I predominantly lean more on not just my own anecdotal experience, but also just a lot of kind of research and work that's been done in the field, out in the field, as opposed to other people rely more on the experimental design type of stuff they do in-house. So I don't think either one's bad. I mean, I know a really good professor who came out of undergrad, went right up to Michigan, got his doctorate in economics, and he's awesome. So I think it's a matter of, don't try to be somebody you aren't. Just go in and be authentic. Again, be vulnerable. Say, this is what I know a lot about. I'm going to bring this to the classroom. And if I don't know certain things, I'll go find somebody who does. And trying to find that. I think the department I work in has a really good bent of people who have a lot of practical real-world experience. So that's valued a lot in our department. But the university overall values the experience, but they also value the publishing. So I have to kind of bone up and get better in that area. So it's kind of finding, don't run away from what got you there, but just work on kind of filling in some of the gaps.
And I'm thinking of, I'm thinking earlier when you talked about speaking truth to your students, and I'm thinking particularly to those on active duty who are thinking of getting out. Is there any resource that you would recommend to them? Just something that's held a lot of significance for you, whether it's a book, a course, just something that they could take a hold of today and invest some time in that's been rewarding and enriching for you and your civilian career and might be beneficial to them as well.
I'm a pretty avid reader. I especially like to read a lot of business books. So that's kind of where my head often goes. Working with Franklin Covey, I still think that The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People is when you read that, it's, for me at least, it was a bit of a watershed moment. So it's been around 25 years. It's sold 25 plus million copies. If you've never read it, pick it up and read it. But The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey is pretty darn good stuff. Foundational stuff. I think that there's a lot of good pieces out there you can read. Jim Collins' Good to Great is great. Anything by Collins I really enjoy. Some of the stuff, there's a book out by a guy named Ram Charan, R-A-M-C-H-A-R-A-N. It's a very simple book called What the CEO Wants You to Know. And in this very simple book, he teaches you the five elements that drive business: cash, margin, velocity, growth, and customers. And understanding those, all of a sudden you realize I could talk to any senior leader because I understand the five major components that drive business. I think there's a lot of good books out there about how to read financials because you're going to be lacking in that regard. So, pick up one of those. And I think that those are some useful things. I got a couple books out myself, so if you're really desperate, you can read one of those. But, things like that kind of help you realize here's what matters out there in the business world. So helping, being well-versed in some of those things is helpful.
That's great. And for listeners, on the show notes at beyondtheuniform.io, I'll add links to all of those books as well as to Patrick's books as well. Patrick, I always like to leave the last question more open-ended, and you've answered a lot of my questions and provided a lot of great advice for me and for our audience. I'm just wondering, what else have we not talked about that you would want veteran listeners to know about personal life, professional life, or any other final words of wisdom?
I had a guy who comes to my class every semester. He's the former CEO of Kraft Foods, and his name is Roger Diramiti. He's a graduate of Vanderbilt and gets MBA from Stanford. Really, really bright guy, and he talks about just making sure, and I kind of guess this echoes back to what I said earlier about the relationship between myself and my wife, is realizing that, you have different roles that you play in life, and it's important to make sure you service all of those roles and clearly differentiate among those roles. So whether you're, you know, you obviously you have to take care of yourself. That's a key piece. You're going to get out of the military, and who's going to care if you do PT in the morning? No one. So you still have to have a discipline around being active. You know, you look around our country and there's a lot of people that are inactive, and it's not, you know, their health declines because of that. So if you don't have your health, you kind of lose that. So take care of self. You have to take care of, if you have a spouse or a key relationship in your life like that, you know, you need to take care of that relationship. Your children, if you have children, at the idea of, you know, when the work's all said and done, do I still have a relationship with them? So kind of defining the different roles in your life. Franklin Covey has a really good tool that they use sometimes. And just maybe I'll leave you with this. Think about if you were to draw a circle on a piece of paper. I encourage you to draw a circle on a piece of paper and then divide it up in, you know, 5 or 6 sections. And think about all the various roles you play in your life. You may have 10 or 20 or 30 roles. You know, you're I'm a husband, and I'm a son, and I'm a brother, and I'm a friend, and I'm a colleague, and I'm a consultant. You know, I have all these different roles. But what are the 5 or 6 or 7 key ones right now? And kind of label the piece of pie with those 5 or 6 ones that are really key right now. And then take a moment and assess for yourself, how are you doing? Are you underperforming? Are you doing kind of a normal job, or are you doing an extraordinary job? And for the couple that you may be underperforming in, just take the time to say, okay, I'm going to dedicate the next few months to trying to move these couple pieces of the pie to a new level. And for me personally, several years ago, I went through that exercise. I said I was going to do it. One of the pieces I put down on that piece of paper was son, S-O-N. And I thought, you know, I'm kind of underperforming. I'm not like this horrible child, but I'm definitely one where I call back to talk to my mom and dad and say, you know, how's the weather and what's going on? You know, just real quick conversations. And after I put down son, I tried in my own way to get better at that. And shortly thereafter, within about 6 months to a year, my mom passed away. And I was glad that I took the time to spend, you know, working on that particular piece of my life. So I would say, you know, we're so prone in life to go, okay, I have to optimize everything, or I have to get better at everything. And just to say, give yourself a little grace and say, you know what, I'm going to pick a couple of things and try to get better at those couple of things. And I think if we learn to do that, you can move mountains over a period of time.
That's great. That's such great advice for anyone listening. I think that's such an incredible, worthy goal to examine all the different facets of our life. And when you said son, I was thinking of your son. It took like 5 or 10 seconds to realize, like, oh, your parents and that relationship. And
yeah.
I think that makes me realize how seldom I think of that is, and how critical of a relationship that is.
Exactly, Justin. I put that down. I put down son, and I did some. My parents must have thought I was, you know, dying of cancer or something, because I'm like sending them postcards and things. Like, who's this? But it was those little things. Or instead of calling them up and going, "Hey, what have you guys been up to? And what's the weather like?" I would actually ask like their opinion about something, and kind of learn from. So those little nuances. And I remember when my mom passed away after the funeral, we were back at my dad's house. You know, if you've ever been through one of those situations, it's always those uncomfortable moments because somebody's missing. You know, and mom's missing. And we're all sitting there, and I remember saying to my wife, I'm like, I'm glad that I kind of spent some time on that piece of the pie. And then she said to me, she said, "You're still a son." I'm like, oh, dang, I am. And I look across the room, there's my dad. My dad's the kind of, I love my dad, but he's always been the kind of guy, if you're like, "Dad, I won the lottery and I'm going to buy you a new car." He'd be like, "No, my car's fine." He's got that personality. So she kind of like told me, "Get over there, you're still a son." And I was like, I walked over to my father and I said to him, I said, "Hey, Dad, I travel a lot for work. Any chance you want to go with me on a trip for work?" And I like braced myself for him to tell me to go away. And he goes, "Where are you going next?" And I was like, "I'm going to Topeka, Kansas." And he's like, "Oh, okay, I'll come with you." And he went to Topeka, Kansas with me. And he went to Florida with me. So he got to see me kind of doing something different, like giving a presentation or doing something like that. And it just changed the dynamic in a lot of ways. So that's what I mean. In so many situations, you know, what takes you from good performance or normal performance to some type of great level of performance isn't some Herculean effort. It's just a couple of little things. And then just consistently hammering on those. And if nothing else, the military teaches you the idea of realizing, oh, hey, a couple things make the difference, and you better get really good at those. And that's what I'm talking about there.
Yeah. Well, this has been great, Patrick. I really appreciate your time on this and just the example you have of having grown your business, but also just diversified what you do to really be fulfilled in life in many different areas. So thank you for taking the time to speak with me and the Beyond the Uniform audience.
Oh, my pleasure, Justin. Thanks for inviting me, and I wish everybody the best of luck. And if I can ever do anything to help, let me know.
Surface.
Thanks for listening. Before you go, three important announcements. First, if you believe in what I'm doing and believe in supporting veterans in their careers, please, please, please help me spread the word. The best way I know to do that right now is by taking 18 seconds to write a review on iTunes. It would mean a lot. Second, based on my interviews, I'd advise any and all veterans to look at servicetoschool.org and the American Corporate Partners. Both are completely free for veterans and give you a lot of great resources for your education or professional life, respectively. Third, there are a ton of other great interviews, resources, and data at beyondtheuniform.io. Check it out, share it with your friends, and drop me a line if you have any feedback, because I'd love to hear from you. Thanks, and see you on the next interview.